Hello, welcome to Big Dating Energy. I am Jeff Gunther, licensed professional counsel, licensed professional counselor. Last week, I read the entire audiobook for my book called Big Dating Energy. You can pre-order it now. I'd highly recommend you listen to it on Audible because I put a lot of fucking work into that goddamn book. It is exhausting reading a book for 4 days straight. It's also, I learned that I don't know how to say some words, and I wish I didn't know. I don't think anybody has told me recently that I don't know how to say these words, and I'd rather not have this knowledge because now I'm like second guessing myself. I feel like an idiot. I don't know how to say the word simultaneously. I think I just said it wrong again. And I don't know, I can't say the word similarly. That's also a real hard word. And unfortunately, I say simultaneously and similarly a lot in my audiobook. And the director that I had was like, nah, dude, say it again. Also, there's a lot of jokes. I know that I always say, like, it's a really funny book, but it is fucking hilarious. However, there's some jokes that are written just for the page, where it only works because you wrote it, and now it's being read by you. To actually say it out loud, very difficult. There's things that you can do when you write that you're not really able to do when you say it. You'll know it when I say it, and you're like, that doesn't roll off the tongue. But I try my best, I promise you. Pre-order that book now at therapyjeff.com or wherever you buy your fucking books. It'll make me so happy. Today, I'm talking to Sabrina Zohar, one of my favorite content creators. She talks about relationships. She's got some like big older sister, I'm going to tell you how it fucking is energy. You can follow Sabrina Zohar on TikTok, if it still exists, where you are, if it's not banned, and the gram, IG, Insta. You can also listen to her podcast at Do The Work, the Do The Work podcast. I'll link to these, obviously, in the show notes, so just click those links. I don't think that hot take by Therapy Jeff, TikTok therapist. I don't think that TikTok is actually going to be banned. I feel like they're going to go to court and it's going to be dragged out for many, many years. And then we're just going to fucking forget about it. Or the court's going to be like, this is freedom of speech, so fuck off, government. Or not. Or I might be completely wrong. I don't know what I'm fucking talking about. But I'm not too worried. I'm also like, if TikTok somehow does get banned, like, ban me, babe. Put me out of my misery, government. I don't want to be on TikTok anymore anyways. I love you, TikTok. I don't really mean that. Or do I? You should also listen to my other podcast called Problem Solved. Somebody recently asked me which podcast do I like more, Big Dating Energy or Problem Solved, and it depends what week it is. So there you go. I love you both, Problem Solved and Big Dating Energy. What else do I have to tell you? Oh, review me. Can you just review me, you little fucking turd? I've been asking every goddamn episode, and you're like, oh, maybe I won't. Maybe I'll do it later. How about you do it now? How about I wait until you do it, and then the episode starts? Should we do that? We're not going to do that, because there's a lot of like beautiful babes out there that have already left me reviews. So I thank you. That's all. Here comes the show. Hello, Sabrina. How are you doing?
I'm great, Jeff. How are you?
I'm so good. And I'm really happy that I get to ask you 20 random questions. Like I said before we started, this is like a favorite format of mine that not a lot of people agree to. So we're just going to do it together and see where it goes. But before I ask you 20 random questions, can you like introduce yourself and tell people where they can find you and what you're all about?
Absolutely. So my name is Sabrina Zohar. I'm a dating coach and host of Do The Work podcast. And Jeff, as you know, I've been a fan of yours for many a moons. And so I love the way you think and really in line with a lot of the things that you implement in the way that you teach and the way that you work with people. So I just love to help people really call them on their shit. I'm very blunt, very direct, girl from New York. Like I just don't, I'm not a coddler. And something that I'm really passionate about is helping people work through their anxiety and really come back home to themselves. Because I think for so long, I personally, in my journey, felt like there was nobody else like me. And I must be the only person that has this anxiety and has all these issues, until I realized that there's actually a community of us and a group of people that genuinely are just looking for a space to feel safe. And so that's something that I like to do. And Do the Work podcast is my journey of that, and just all the goodness and things that we've learned along the way.
Yeah. I was talking to somebody, I don't remember who, a journalist that was interviewing me, and who was a fan of yours. And they were saying, Sabrina is like the older sister I never had, who just like gives it to me straight, right? Like, is like not fucking around and is protective, feels protective. So I feel like that's probably the vibe. That's one of the vibes you're going for, right? So
for sure. It's like it's said with so much love. Like, nothing I ever say is coming out of malice or me trying to hurt people. But at the end of the day, like, if you get triggered or hurt, that's just an area of exploration. Because like, my sister is like this with me. She's very hard, she's very blunt, and it took me a while to receive it. And then once I did, I was like, oh. So yes, 100%. I'm really trying to just help people in the best way. And sometimes that is by just being a little bit tough.
Yeah, I love it. And it feels refreshing. And I think, I feel like whenever I go on TikTok in the morning, you're doing a live. How many lives do you do a live every day? That's what it feels like.
Every day on TikTok. Yeah, not Instagram, because that's a weird beast in and of itself. But TikTok, it's just been fun because it's how I get to engage with the community. Because, like, you know, I don't deal with the trolls and the bots and the comments and stuff. Like, that is not good for my mental health. So at least being able to go on there and just be able to grow the community. And not to mention that TikTok also just doesn't show my content anymore. So this is really the only way that I can actually talk to people these days.
Yeah. When did you start posting on TikTok?
Originally, the first post I ever made was pretty much like October 2022. So it's been like a year and a half-ish. And then my Instagram started March of last year, and the podcast started January of last year. So it's all pretty new.
Yeah.
Because you too, right? You are like somebody that came up in the last like couple of years.
Yeah. I've been doing this for 2.5 years.
Yeah. So you know that beast.
Oh, yeah. All too well. I have a lot of feelings about TikTok and what they show and don't show, and it's a whole thing. And maybe we'll get to it, but I want to start the 20 questions. You can skip one question, but if you skip that question, then I'm going to give you another question that you might not like even more, but then you have to answer it anyways. Okay. So number one, what's your sign?
I am a Taurus. Okay. Taurus sun. Okay, I fuck this up every time. Taurus sun, Virgo rising, Leo moon.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Are you an astrology girly, or do you not give a shit about star signs?
Okay, I have a tarot card tattoo. So like, I am into the woo-woo, but I'm into it in the sense where, of course, like yesterday, all my tech went down and I was like, there's fucking retrograde, isn't there? And sure enough, there was retrograde. So like certain things, but I think there is a balance. Like, I'm not the type that's going to, like, my partner is a Gemini. And of course, everyone, they're like, oh, you aren't compatible. And it's like, oh, we're fucking fine. So there's certain things that I think it can fit in. And like, absolutely, I'll read my horoscope and I want to know what's going on. And then there are certain times where I'm like, that doesn't work for me.
You're such a Taurus.
Exactly. I'm so cliche. Yeah. What are you?
I'm a Capricorn sun, a Taurus rising, and a Virgo moon.
Oh my God, we're almost same but different, just a little bit. By the way, is it fair? Yeah. Am I allowed to ask you questions, or is it just you asking me?
Oh, you can ask me questions. Yeah, I don't have to answer all the questions you do, but you can ask whatever you want. And I'll decide if I want to. It's similar to like if you can ask your therapist, your real therapist, any question you want, but it's up to them if they're going to be an asshole about it and answer or give a reach around. I don't know. Not a reach around. That sounds horrible. I hope your therapist, no therapists are giving reach arounds. I mean, like, if they're going to go around that, you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. In person, if they're doing a reach around, that is concerning.
That is very concerning, yeah. What is your tarot card tattoo?
So I have it here. It's the strength card. So it was my mom has been doing tarot for like 20 years. And so with my first tattoo, my sister and I was in New York visiting her. And I was like, we need to get a tattoo. Like, it's my first one. I'm 18. I remember, like, I lost my virginity. I voted and I got a tattoo in the same week. And I was like, welcome to 18. Like, that was a big – that was a woman. And so – My sister already had a bunch. And I remember we were doing the tarot cards and I was like, with my mom, and I just stopped and I was like, oh my God, we should do this for mom. And it just, that was it. That was the first one. And of course I chose my ribs, which is like the worst place to get a tattoo. But
oh, yeah. Is it really painful there?
Do you have any or no?
I have zero tattoos. Yeah.
The ribs feel like somebody is as if your bone was just in your hand and someone was writing on it. It's just the most delicate place. And so at least I was thrown in the deep end, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause now you have a bunch of tattoos.
Exactly. So now the least painful spot is all the ones that you'd think would be, but still to this day, that is the most, but it means a lot because it was something that my sister and I got to do together. And I'm big on tattoos that at least just have a meaning to me. Doesn't need to be a meaning to everybody else.
That's very sweet. Do you feel like there's some sort of are you always like craving or planning your next tattoo? That's the thing, isn't it? Yeah.
It's addicting. Like when you're getting your one, you're already thinking of the next. And I'm like, no, mm-hmm. pace yourself. Mm-hmm. But I'm getting tattooed in 2 weeks. So like I realize that an idea comes in and then it's like an itch that you didn't know you had to scratch. And then the whole time you're jonesing, you're fixing for the next one. And then you get it and you're like, what's next?
Yeah, I get it. Question number two. How did your parents express their love to you?
Oof.
Like, how did you know that they loved you?
So it's a little, get the small little violin out. It's a little sad. So I grew up in a narcissistic father, people pleasing mother. So I had a dynamic of my father thought showing love meant I pay for you. So you have a house over you have a roof over your head, right? So I can go out. He cheated on my mom. He had, daddy issues up the wazoo, but my father thought if I just pay for things and that's it, I'm a father. That's just his provider mentality was, but you have everything you need. Did I have everything I need? I didn't have, didn't have the emotional support, didn't have somebody there to teach me about boundaries or non-negotiables or to teach me how someone should show up for me. I didn't have any of those guidances. What I did have was my father teaching me that I was a burden. Everything was, you're too much. Just stop it. And that carried itself into my adulthood and into my dating life. Whereas my mom was quality time, but my mom also, she had so much childhood trauma. She disassociates. So her thing is like, she can be sitting there talking to you and you'll be talking to her and then you could just see she's just not home. So it was like, my father thought if you have the physical things in your life, you have a home, you go to school, you're fine. My mom thought I just have to be there. But there was no one emotionally there. There was no one to teach us anything about emotions. And so all of us ended up manifesting in our different ways. And unfortunately, it wasn't great until recently, until you start to figure your shit out, go to therapy and do the work.
Mm-hmm. How many siblings did you have?
So there's my older brother and he was he was the one with severe ADHD, like put on Ritalin as a kid. So you can imagine the household was chaotic, with Joe just being the problem child. Then there was my sister, the middle one. And then there was me. So I'm the baby. I have the bad rep, but our whole childhood, cause my brother, so I don't know if you've seen, have you seen the program on Netflix?
No.
Wild documentary of like the drug. Mm-hmm. The drug program. So that my brother did that. Oh, so he went to a wilderness program for 4 months. Right, and then, so he was kidnapped in the middle of the night, taken the whole thing.
That's fucked up.
So yeah, that happened when I was 9. So it was like, it's a severity of a lot of early on in life that impacts you as you get older. But nonetheless, it's like, we all still have our shit, but yeah, there's three of us. And then my parents have been divorced since I was 14 and should have happened way sooner.
Yeah. Was there any like relief when they got divorced or was that like a pretty upsetting experience?
It was pretty traumatic in and of itself to the point where I had something called reflex sympathetic dystrophy. The trauma was so severe. So my brother at that point was already at the house. He was in his program and we didn't he was taken in the middle of the night and I didn't talk to him for 2 years. So that was talk about like literal abandonment. And then my sister, the day my mom told her where your brother's gone, that's when I lost my sister. Because she was like his little shadow. And so she lost her identity. And then at that point she was like, fuck all of you. So my parents got divorced, I think like 4 years later. And at that point, my sister was about to leave the house. My brother was gone. And I was the only one that overheard their conversation. And so I was upstairs having a panic attack because I'm like, oh my God, like this is it. And a month prior to their conversation, my dad, I knew that he was cheating on my mom. I knew that this woman that was his mistress, and he came home to promise me, I swear, I'm not going to leave the family, da, da, da. That motherfucker left us for her, got engaged to her, the whole shebang. Holy they did shit. Not end up getting, yeah. yeah, they did not end up getting married, but pretty much from 18 down, was just that reaffirmation of you're a burden. I don't want you here, but I have to. My father had told me, I love you because I have to, not because I want to, when I was like 15. So it was super, yeah. And then my parents dated for 5 years after they divorced because all my mom wanted to do was keep the household together. So you can imagine the dynamics that ensued. But it was when I was 18 was when my mom told my dad, I'm done. And they didn't speak for like 3 years. And then my dad disowned us because we took my mom's side. Welcome to a narcissist. Yeah.
That is so much. Jeez. I know. Yeah. Oh, God. And well, I mean, it sounds, you know, like you've said, it sounds like, you know, you've gone to therapy, you've like processed a lot of this and you've come out the other side. And it seems like you're like very aware, very thoughtful, very mindful of like how your past has affected you and your relationships. And probably, you know, when you started dating, your relationships are kind of like mirroring or reinforcing the like, I am a burden, I'm not good enough sort of shit. So
I married my father. I literally did. It was the exact replica. And so for anybody who says, no, my childhood was great, but I have all these issues in adulthood, it's like, oh, darling, I think we need to go back a few chapters at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Intense. Thank you for your answer and vulnerability.
Of course. Sorry, I hope I didn't dampen the mood, but I just wanted to be honest and more so to share it for people that like you can go through shit, but you can still make it out the other side. It's just about having to do the work to get through it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the next question is connected, but see if you can like, okay, can you think of a specific moment in your childhood that shaped the way you approach love and relationships? And this could be like seeing your parents or watching something on TV or friends together. Like, is there something that you can remember that really had like a big impact on you, whether it was good or bad or something?
Yes. Oh, yeah. As we were talking, I was like, no, there it is. It was when I was 8, my mom went out of town. And I remember, because she had her best friend, and they went to, I think, Australia or something. And so my mom was gone for 2 weeks. And that was the first time my father took me to the first girlfriend he had. And I had to stay at her house. And he left me there. He left me there for like 3 days. And he would come back and then like sleep in the room with her. And then I remember just... that was that moment where I remember thinking like, I'm alone. Like I'm a burden to him because she was an alcoholic. So she was super volatile to me. Mm-hmm. And then I remember crying and telling dad, like, when's mom coming home? And he was like, I said, when's mom coming home? I don't like this mom. And he looked at me and he was like, don't you fucking say that to your mother. He was like, you have one mother. I don't ever want you to call this woman your mother. She is her name. And he was like, and not to mention, you don't tell your mother any of this. And I was like, okay, I don't really know. So I learned at that very young age, like, so secrets are okay. I normalize like, what, your dad doesn't go out at 2 a.m. to go to bars? Like, that's weird to you. Yeah, no, that's not appropriate. So that was like just such an impactful memory of your burden. And I don't want you around. And if you're going to be around, I need you to be a good girl and keep your mouth shut. And it was just like, oh, okay. So my needs don't matter. My emotions don't matter. Let me just make sure I'm taking care of other people.
Yeah. I mean, you were kind of like forced to be like, I'm just going to fucking survive this and do whatever I need to do, self-abandonment in order to make sure everybody else is okay. Otherwise, it's really scary or upsetting or threatening, right?
100%. Like at that true, like somebody said the other day on Insta, like abandonment doesn't actually happen. And I was like, no, mate, just because it hasn't happened to you doesn't mean that people don't literally get abandoned. And I was like, my father hit me when I was a kid because my sister and I got into a fight and left us for 2 weeks and we didn't know if he was coming back. Like, yes, there is very much a reality that that can happen. But again, doesn't mean I'm not going to villainize my dad. I think he did the best he could with the information he knew. I don't think he's a good person, but I also am not going to like make this whole thing that it's not. What it was, like you said, I had to survive. And all I learned was coping mechanisms to survive that ultimately carried me into my adult life, which ultimately was not the relationships I wanted to have because I was replicating my father.
Right. And those coping mechanisms that you learned, you were able to survive your childhood. You didn't get out unscathed, obviously, like you were deeply affected, but they did what they needed to do. They got you through the childhood. And then you saw that they were creating like a bunch of bullshit in your relationships that you had to work through. But of course, it's going to come up in your like primary relationships with romantic partners as an adult. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
100%. And like working through it is a process, but it's worth it. And it's one of those moments that sometimes just saying, I don't think this is normal. It's a good place to start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, number four, you're doing really great so far.
Thanks. You're doing great, sweetie.
thanks. Yeah. Number four, what was the primary way you got attention when you were a kid? So you were talking about like you felt like a burden, but was there something that you did to like try to get some sort of positive attention? What was that?
Yelling. I would scream the loudest. That was where I learned. So I remember telling my sister, because it was my brother was the ADHD. So you had to compete against that. You had to compete against the school always calling. Like Joe was always in trouble. Joe got arrested when he was in high school. Joe had the drug problem. There was always something going on. So, and then my sister, she went complete shutdown. She was super avoidant. Everything was, I can't talk to any of you. So just shut down. So my coping mechanism, my mom told me when I was a kid, the running joke for years was Sabrina cries so much, or Sabrina throws up after every meal. And so for a long time, I was like, nobody thought that this was weird as a kid. Like I'm literally right. Like you didn't think this was strange. So then I started to ask my mom recently, what happened before I would throw up? And she would say, you were crying. And I was like, okay, peel it back. My dad would put me in the crib and go out and I would cry so hard that I would throw up. And then my mom would come in. So I literally, we're talking little pint-sized infant. What did I learn? You have to act out in order to get someone to come get you. And even then, that wasn't the person I wanted to come get me. So I always figure, I told my sister, just scream louder. Maybe dad will hear you. And so that was me being very reactive instead of taking a minute to respond and realizing like, you don't need to scream to be heard. You can just say it. But that was the one way I was heard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you, it sounds like you had to compete with a lot to be heard. So I would understand you getting really loud in order to get some sort of attention.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We're going to change the vibe a little bit. Number five, who was your first crush?
Celebrity or human? Or like person I knew?
It can be a real person or it can be a celebrity or it can be a fucking cartoon character, whatever you want.
Okay. My first that comes to I had a few. I had a few like obsessions when I was a kid. And that was also like such a, like I was so boy crazy that I'm like, oh, no, the writing was on the wall. I was obsessed, like obsessed with Heath Ledger, obsessed with Brandon Lee from The Crow.
Okay.
Just thought he was so hot. Obsessed with, yeah, I know that was an obsession for quite a few years. Obsessed with Brandon Boyd from Incubus. I have a thing with the name Brandon. Is there a method to the madness? Who knows? And I was obsessed with my brother's friend Drew when I was seven, and I had a photo of him in my room, and every night I'd go to bed and just dream of him. And it's like, aww. It was so creepy. The guy was like 10 years older than me and I was seven, but those were my first crushes. Of course, I think prior to that was like Backstreet Boys.
Sure.
Backstreet Boys over NSYNC.
Oh, really? Interesting. I don't meet many of you, Backstreet Boys over NSYNC. I feel like it's mostly NSYNC. Yeah. Did you like hate NSYNC or were you just like neutral in it? No.
I thought NSYNC was okay. Like I thought, of course, I was a big Spice Girls fan, big Hanson fan, and Backstreet Boys, I just liked more of their songs. Of course, I liked NSYNC, but I was obsessed with Brian from Backstreet Boys, and I think that's really why I liked them more. Because Nick, what was his name? Aaron Carter's brother, Nick Carter?
Yes.
He was,
yes.
Of course, the heartthrob, and I was like, no, I like the one that nobody's paying attention to.
Interesting. Right? Well, the three celebrities, though, that you named, Heath and the Crow guy and Brandon Boyd, they're pretty moody, right? Yeah. Like those are kind of dark, moody guys. Yeah. Did that stick? Are you still into dark, moody guys?
It stuck into, yeah. It's painful. My type, even my mom, when I would show her guys, she was like, it's uncanny. She's like, it's as if you just have a radar to find they all look the same. They just have different names. It was great. It got to a point where I was like, it hit me a few years ago. I was like, oh my God, they remind me of my dad. Like they look like my dad when he was younger, tall, thin, athletic, brown hair, darker features. But I loved like tattoos and like just kind of that rugged, edgy guy. My partner is the polar opposite of all of that. Like he has one tattoo and that was because his sister passed away and he wanted to honor her. He's not super athletic. He's not like tall, thin, athletic. Like he's just a different version. And it was the best decision I ever made was going for somebody that wasn't my moody type because those moody guys led me to nothing.
Right. Yeah. You know? I'm glad that you figured that out.
Thank you.
But I get the attraction. And Brandon Boyd, what a fucking heartthrob. Boyd
in his prime with those cut lines. Oh, God.
He knew exactly what he was doing, taking his fucking shirt off all the time, showing those lines. Bravo.
All the time. And hook, line, and sinker. I was such a slut for it. Who was yours? Who was your childhood crush? I would love to know.
Before that, have you seen Brandon Boyd lately?
So that's why I keep saying back then he was hot. Is he not as hot now?
He's still sexy.
Is he really?
He's still very sexy. I think if you looked him up after this podcast, you'd be like, yeah, still into it. Yeah.
Oh, God.
I mean, first celebrity crush was, I'm a little older than you, but I'm sure you probably remember the reference, DJ Tanner from Full House.
Oh, of course.
I love DJ. I thought she was such a cutie.
Mm-hmm. Was it just her physical that you liked or also her personality?
I liked both. I liked her like fun, quippy personality. I mean, and you know, I was a little kid, so I thought she was really funny. Looking back on it, Full House isn't like the laugh fest that I thought it was, but it was when I was a little kid. So I was into that. And then as I grew up, it was like Gwen Stefani from No Doubt was just like my person for so long. Yeah.
She's still so hot.
She's still so hot. And I was so excited when her and Gavin Rosdale, remember him from Bush, he's kind of got a Brandon Boyd thing going. He's just very sexy and drop dead gorgeous. Yeah. So it was like they were my celebrity crush couple. Yeah.
I actually, the other day I was at the dentist and they only had YouTube and they were like, you could put anything. And so I was putting on like a 90s playlist of music videos, which, wow, talk about a different experience watching music videos now versus when we did when we were kids, because it's all you had to watch. Right. But like, I got to watch Just a Girl and I was like, she like reaffirmed how hot she was, because I was like, man, that strength that she had to come out with all these boys and be on top. I was like, oh, baby, you have, it just shaped us. And as a woman, it's a great example as well.
Yeah, it was interesting. She had this like interesting thing where she was like, I'm a punk rocker and I'm going to be really punky and different and alternative. But a lot of her songs are about like, I just want to be a girl. Like, I want to have a baby, or like, I'm just a girl and you're judging me for it. She was sort of like all over the map a little bit. And I think that a lot of people like didn't quite know what to do with her. How to like understand her or something. But yeah, she's a legend. She's a treasure. Number six, who was your first love? Like, who'd you really fall in love with? So a celebrity crush, but a real person.
A human person. The first boy that like sticks out, his name was Micah. I'm not going to say his last name just in case. Blow him up. I was about to, and I was like, don't do that. His name was Micah. I was 12. He was 13. Oh. He was like a year older than me. And he was my first kiss. He was like the first boy that I was like, like, did I actually love him? No. The first I fell in love with anybody that, like, did you ever watch Eternal Sunshine?
Yeah,
that's where I named my dog Clem. Like, it's my favorite movie. Aww. And I always remember Jim Carrey saying, like, why do I fall in love with every woman that gives me the slightest bit of interest? And I remember just being like, you cut me to the core, because that's so much like when I think about my first guy that I was in love with after, like, as an adult, was the guy I lost my virginity to. And it's like, I didn't fucking know this guy. Like, I knew the idea of him and I knew the fantasy I created. And I realistically knew, how would I act if I were him? So I filled that space of him not doing shit with how all the fantasies of how I would show up if I were him to woo me. But when I truly fell in love was not until like my mid-20s, where I was like, oh, now I can understand what it feels like to say like I'm in love with somebody, meaning I see the good and the bad, not just the shiny parts of them. But Micah, he threw me for a loop. He was the first boy to ever, I remember I asked him to be my boyfriend after we made out, and he said no. He said he didn't want a girlfriend. Oh, no. It really started young. I know. Yeah. And then he dated a girl named Barbie. And I remember becoming friends with her, because I wanted to understand, like, what does she have that I don't? Like, so unhealthy. Yeah, I know. 12 years old, I was doing this. So it's like,
torturous. Please.
Yeah. And I remember just being so devastated. And then there came other boys after that. But that was the first time where it was like, you chose somebody over me. And it stung. And then you're like obsessed with this person even more. I remember his email address. I had a ringtone when he would come on AOL. Yes, I just aged myself.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Well, yeah. You remember setting a custom notification for when someone would come on?
Oh, yeah. I did. Yeah. And interesting, my first kiss was with somebody I met in a chat room on AOL.
No way.
Remember how you'd go into those chat rooms and you'd do like age, sex, ASL? Location check, yeah. ASL? Somebody did that. And the location was Santa Monica, where I grew up. And we found out quickly that she lived 5 blocks away. And then we chatted on AOL for a couple weeks until she was like, why don't you come over? And I was like, yeah, okay, yeah, I'm going to come over. So I walk over to her house. And I knew that it was like, you're going to come over and you're going to do a kiss. You're going to give me a kiss. And I lied to her. I said that I've kissed like so many girls. and so she was like, come on over. My parents aren't home. We go into her like living room and she puts on a very sexy movie. I can't remember the name of the movie, but maybe you do. Do you remember Liv Tyler, the daughter yes. of, yeah, there was like some French film that she was in and it was like, it was French. So it seemed sexy. I can't remember what the fuck, but it was playing and I was like, we're sitting next to each other and neither of us were moving. And I knew that she wanted me to give her a kiss. So she was just sort of staring at my face while I was like staring at the TV. And she was like, hey, how about we thumb wrestle? And I was like, oh, okay, like I'm actually really good at thumb wrestling. I would love to do that with you. So we're like thumb wrestling. And while we're doing this, she's like pulling me towards her while I'm just trying to pin her thumb.
I'm like, literally crying right now. The story is so good.
And so she pulls me towards her and I pin her thumb and I look up and she just goes in and kisses me. And it's the sweetest little first kiss I ever got. Yeah, it was pretty
Did you
adorable.
Ever see her again?
Yeah, so then we did a kiss and that was fun. And then I left and then I came over maybe a few days later. And again, she puts on the movie and we sit on her couch and her parents aren't home. And she's like, okay, let's kiss. And I was like, okay, let's kiss. And so we're kissing and this is great. And she's like, are you going to do anything else? And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. She's like, well, don't you want to touch me? And I was like, okay. And so she takes my hand and puts it on her boob. And I just like leave it there and just like gently on her boob.
Like a cat. Just
like, yeah, just sort of resting there. And then she stopped kissing me and she's like, okay, that's it. And then that was the last time I got to kiss her.
Yeah. Oh, little Jeff. Yeah, you're like, fuck, I just blew my cover. She's like, oh yeah, you've kissed a lot of girls. You're like, yeah.
I know. Which is sort of like this weak hand resting on her chest. She was like, get the fuck out of here.
So for anybody listening, please don't do this nowadays. Please don't meet anybody in a chat group and go to their house. Listen, when we were kids, that all sounded cute. Don't do that, though.
Yeah, no, that's no good.
But makes a great story. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, it's a cute story. Yeah. Number 7. Okay, we're getting through these. Has there been a time where a hater or a troll has really affected you?
Oh, my God. I don't even think I can count anymore. It's a specific core belief. You know what I mean.
Sure.
It's a specific core belief because like, let's call the elephant in the room. I talk really fast. I curse a lot. Like I'm high energy. Mm-hmm. Like I don't think I'm reinventing the wheel here. Mm-hmm. And almost every day I'll get a message of like, I got one this morning of like a video that went viral. Very, very well received. Lots of positive, like, fuck yes. Thank you for this. And it was just, you speak really fast. You're giving me anxiety. Your community, all of a sudden she spoke for the community. Your community doesn't like this. We don't appreciate it. I highly suggest that you slow it down because we don't like the way you speak. And I was like, I'm sorry, could you show me who this we is? And so I get that every fucking day of like, you should slow down. You're the, and it's like, what's the core belief that gets hit? You're too much. And so sometimes like I'll be in the middle of doing a live with somebody and all of a sudden I'll just see like 10 comments and I'll sometimes stop and I'm like, how fucking rude are you? I'm in the middle of talking. I'm in the middle of sharing valuable information, helping you. And all you can stop, instead of listening to the information, all you can do is try to control the situation and get somebody else to change in my room, by the way, my atmosphere. You now want me to change who I am so that you're more comfortable. Mm-hmm. And then it just reminds me of like, oh, right. Those are the people that in dating expect the same things. And that's where that unrealistic expectation starts to happen. And I, frankly speaking, just don't have patience for it anymore. And so I just block people at this point. Like if you don't like what I do and you think the appropriate measure instead of just moving on with your life is to send me a personal message of how much you don't like me, how much you hate me, I'm the worst human being in the world, but yet you follow me. And yet now I need to change how I am. for a minute when I first started doing all this, I used to literally, to regulate my nervous system, I would punch the air imagining I was hitting a troll. Cause I was like, I would get so overwhelmed and get so scared and shut down and fear and all of those emotions. And now it's like, yeah, it hurts. But then I just remind myself, like, you know what, if I don't stand for something, I fall for everything. And so just because you don't like the way I do things does not mean that there's not a whole 9 billion people in the world that might. And so I try to also share that with dating. It's like, just because somebody might not be picking up what you're putting down doesn't mean that there's not somebody else right next to them that loves what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, those fucking trolls.
Fuck those trolls.
Do you even read your comments, or are you like me where you're just like, I'm not dealing with this?
I've gone through different phases. I used to be, before I like started, you know, being a content creator, I used to think that it was really important. I was like, if people are content creating out there and creating these communities and creating posts that have a bunch of comments on their video, then those creators need to manage their fucking comment section. Until I became a content creator myself, there is no fucking time. I do not have enough like emotional resilience. I do not want to do that emotional labor. You're just trying to fuck with me. Fuck you. So I don't want to like let you win by giving you that sort of like energy or attention. I know what you're doing. You could just like, if you don't like my shit, just scroll on, babe. Nobody fucking cares. Like, it's so much easier for you to scroll on by. But every now and then, like you're saying, they hit me in a place that's a deep wound, whether they're trying to do it or not. And it's like, ooh. And it used to hurt a lot more. I also used to be that idiot that would like go after the trolls and be like,
yeah,
tell me why. Tell me more. What's wrong with you? You want to have a discussion? Let's do this. I'm going to show you that I'm human, or I'm going to make you feel like a fucking asshole. Like, I don't do that anymore. There was yesterday, I made a post. And one of the things that I do is like, oh, I made a post. I see that people are like disagreeing with part of what I said. I have a friend who's an expert in like poly relationships. And I said something about poly relationships. I was like, nope, that's not right. So I was like, hey, poly friend, go into my comment section and on my behalf, like answer all the people. And also you'll get a bunch of followers and I'll pin your comment and it'll seem like I don't have to spend any time in that comment section. I just have to pin your comment and people will be like, oh, okay, Jeff is doing something and I'm not wasting any energy on this fucking shit.
It's the emotional bandwidth. That's exactly what you said. It's like, and if people think that it's like, oh, what do you think? We just get one of these a day. It's like, there's hundreds sometimes of messages or feedback on the podcast. And it's like, anyways.
Okay. Number 8, what is your most controversial relationship take?
Oof. The first one that comes to mind that got me into such hot shit was two that are equally as fucking controversial. That just because somebody doesn't text you after first or second date does not mean that they ghosted you. Like, you don't know these people. A first and second date just to see if you like this person. Now, listen, would I think it'd be nice? Of course. Like, I'm not saying that everybody should just go, but I think a lot of people that go are like, I got ghosted. And I'm like, okay, go on. We went on a date and I never heard from him again. It's like, no, that guy just wasn't into you. Like, I'm sorry. It's just when I've dated in New York and LA, sometimes I had 10 dates a week. Like, and I'm not trying to, it's just that you have a lot. And what was I going to tell every single guy? Hey, sorry, not into it. Because then it's a dialogue. Then they get angry at me and I'm like, this isn't worth my time. I don't know you. I don't owe you anything. So that was the first one. Second one that really, when I first started saying this, was hot shit. And now everybody is fucking jumping on the bandwagon, which is cool. That texting is not the texting is a false sense of intimacy, and it is not an indication of someone's intentions with you. And that I was the girl that would break it off with guys because after one day of not getting a text, I would be so anxious. I'd send them like, you clearly don't value me like I do. I didn't value me. Let's just say what it was. And I was doing protest behavior, hoping they would come closer. And all I was doing was pushing them further away. And so now what I've learned is I'm like, I have so many people that write in every day of like, this guy's amazing. Everything's amazing about this person, but they don't text me. Should I end it? And I'm like, it's maddening. So that's kind of the two bigger controversial pieces that I have that I just will die on the hill because my partner, when we first met, was not a texter. That did not mean he didn't care about me. That just meant that he did not want to be on his phone all the time, but would rather spend time with me.
Yeah. And yeah, and that's just sort of like, that's the safest way to think about it too, of like, I'm not going to attach meaning or project a bunch of bullshit onto this. And I can, and if I do start to attach meaning onto it, then I can probably just like ask them, do a check-in, be like, what's going on here? What is your regular routine when it comes to like texting or having a phone handy? Right.
Yeah, it's just communicate. You always say that. You're like, just communicate. Like, yeah, I saw a reel this morning. Someone sent me and she's like, please do a stitch. And it's this one coach. I can't fucking stand her. All about the high value woman. And it's just, and she was like, if a guy doesn't text you for a couple, like for days, and I'm like, all right, for days, like, oh yeah. And then, but, and it's like, listen, I understand saying if somebody doesn't do this, then maybe they're just not interested, or maybe they're just not picking up what you're putting down. But she then creates this narrative, well, he doesn't care about you. He doesn't like you. And it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Why do we need to attach a narrative? Do you have facts to back up that he didn't text you because he doesn't care about you? He doesn't like you. He doesn't think that you're worth it. Or can we just look and say, he didn't text me. Well, that doesn't work for me. So I'm just going to move the fuck on with my life.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So anyways.
I like those. I like those controversial takes.
Thank you.
Number nine, what is the worst way to pick up on you? Like, what is just like such a fucking turn off or an ick that you've been like a bad pickup line or a bad way to be approached? What is that?
So, two. One is when someone puts me down, like when they try to, like the whole boys sure, be sure, mean sure. to you. And I'm like, go fuck yourself. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the second one is when people are overly complimentary of my looks. Like when it's just everything of being like, you're so beautiful. Hey, gorgeous. That smile's mesmerizing. I'm like, yo, it's fucking rehearsed. Like, I get it. Like, you're obviously, we're here because we're physically attracted to each other. Like, we know that. And I appreciate a compliment. Hey, you look beautiful. Like, thank you. But it's not sexy to me when I used to be on the apps and guys would like, oh my God, your hair is so sexy. I bet it's strong. And I'm like, I know where the fuck you're going with this, you creep. You want to ask me if you can grab onto it. So I just, that's not the way to approach me is by either putting me down or by being overly complimentary of my looks. I'd rather just like my partner did, where he picked up something on my profile and he had a conversation with me about that. And it wasn't about my physicality.
Yeah. So how long have you been with your partner now?
Year and a half.
Yeah. Now being with him for a year and a half, does it hit different if he does compliment your looks or Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And like, even when we met, like he was always like, you're beautiful. And like, he was complimentary, right. But it wasn't like, hey, gorgeous. That smile is incredible. And you're like, oh, geez, that's the first thing you say to me. It's like, okay, thanks. Right. Haven't heard that one before.
I get it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But like, you can compliment me. Like, thank you. Call me pretty and give me snacks. Like, that's really all I need.
Right. Number 10, do you believe in soulmates?
I don't. And now let me explain before I all of a sudden get everybody being like, what? I think we create the person that we're for on this planet. I don't personally believe that, like, before I met Ryan, that he was written in the stars for me. I think that life unfolded and I opened myself up to somebody new and that I'm creating him as my person on this planet. But that doesn't mean that there's only one. I think that we can have soulmates at different times of our life. Like, you can have somebody, like my sister is very lucky. She's been with her partner for 20 years. They met when they were 18. But that doesn't mean that that's going to be for life. Maybe in 10 years they grow apart. Who knows? So I think if somebody is a connection, I'm here for it. And I like to always preface for now, because I've thought people were my soulmates in the past and that allowed me to stay in something a lot longer than I should have. And it kept me on a loop. And I kept thinking, no, but they're my soulmate. And it's like, no, he was just a narcissist who reminded you of your father. He wasn't your soulmate. So that's just my personal opinion on it.
You can get in trouble if you think that like there's the one for you.
Right.
Like you're saying, put him up on the pedestal, sort of like there's way too many expectations for that person. You might put up with some bullshit that you shouldn't be. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. I'm not going to even ask you any follow-up questions because I know that I'm like, no, we have to get through 10 more questions. So,
okay. Number 11, Sabrina, are you a good breaker-upper?
I am, actually. I'm very direct and very to the point. I don't like to do it. I get really overwhelmed. I hate for me, the people that know me, I hate confrontation. Like, it's one of my least favorite things. You get the flush of wave of heat. My eyes start to dart. I feel super dysregulated because I don't like having drama. So to break up with someone, but I have broken up with almost every ex because it just, I remember my ex, I literally looked over to him and I was like, this isn't working. And he looked at me and he was like, I think you're right. And we were both like, okay. Mm. Like, we both cried. Like, we sat there, we held each other. And then I was like, okay. And we became friends and then go on with your life.
Is that how it usually works, where like you get to a point where you know you need to break up and then you do it? Or do you like wait for a while, struggle with it, and no?
I struggle with it for maybe like in the past, every guy that this has happened, what ends up happening is I have feelings for someone else. And then the minute, because I am not, my father cheated on my mother the whole marriage. That is not something I'm going to inflict on somebody. And it's just something I personally don't do. But the minute I start to feel like I want the attention from somebody else, I'm not interested in my partner anymore, the physicality, like I don't want to have sex with them, usually within a couple of weeks, I process it, I sit on it. And I challenge it. And it's, you know, it's understanding the difference between, do I not like them? Like, I almost broke up with my boyfriend many a times because he was really healthy. And so that was scary to me and uncomfortable versus like now that we're in a relationship, I had an ex reach out to me a few days ago and he was one of those people that was, oh my God, that was the guy. And when he reached out, of course you're like, oh shit. Like, there's a decision you have to make. And I remember just being like, well, I'm really happy. Take care. It's good to hear from you. Mm-hmm. Because now in this moment, I'm very satisfied. But usually it's like, give me a couple of weeks and I'm like, hey, I don't need to string you along. I don't want to hurt your time because if I waste your time, I'm wasting part of your life. And that's just not fair to you.
That's very accurate and a good way to put it. I think I like to think that I'm a good breaker upper. I don't know that I am because I have like a real, the one flaw that I have really fucks up my whole breakup game where like, I will break up with you in a direct, compassionate, straightforward way. However, if you don't accept that breakup, then I'm like, well, then let's stay together, I guess. Like, well, if you really want to do this, then I guess we're going to stay together. So like, you can like so easily convince me to stop breaking up with you that it turns me into a bad breaker-upper. So I need to work
on it. Here, I thought you were going to tell me like, and then if they don't take me, then I block them. And I was going to be like, okay, valid. But you're like, no, I just get back into it. It's like, oh, okay. Okay.
And it's not even like, if I break up with you and then you say no, and then we get back together, like you can do this multiple times. Every single time I break up with you, I'll get back together with you. If in the middle of it, you're like, come on, babe. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm being silly. So
that's your Achilles heel.
Yeah. Yeah. We've kind of talked about this already, but number 12, what's the problematic or unhealthy relationship pattern you keep experiencing in your relationships? And why do you think you continued to experience it?
Yeah. I mean, I'll just reiterate what we talked about earlier. It was like, hey, I had no self-worth. I never believed that I was worthy, deserving. I wanted to believe that. I played a big game. I came off as if I was super confident. And then on the inside, I was a fucking teddy bear. And I still am. But overarching, though, was really just not having boundaries and not learning to say, no, this doesn't work for me. No, I don't like this. Hey, here are my needs. And so by staying good girl and by trying to be the cool girl, right? I don't have any needs. Who am I? Oh, my God, please. You call me at midnight. I'll be there at midnight because I'm cool.
So chill. Yeah.
So chill. Oh, my God. Why? She is just the dream. And it just obviously never worked. And I took it as a challenge accepted when somebody wasn't interested in me because, of course, we all know it came from those core beliefs I had growing up that no one's going to be there for you anyways. So you may as well just take what you can get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have clearly done the work in the answers to these questions. It's very clear and it's very attractive. We'd love to see it. Okay. So number 13 is I'm going to say a thing and you're going to tell me if it's a red flag or not. And I've got 10 things for you. Okay.
All right.
So, this is like, is it a red flag if your partner doesn't talk to their mother?
No. And I'll say this because it takes a lot of strength for somebody to walk away from their parents if there's a toxic relationship. So there's nuance. It depends on the reasons why. But I have respect for, like, my partner doesn't talk to his father. Rightfully so.
Yeah. Good boundaries. They only have one friend. Is it a red flag?
Yes.
What's happened? Yeah. They use bed sheets as curtains.
Yes.
They've cheated in two different relationships.
I don't believe once a cheater, always a cheater, but I think I would need to know what have they done after that. Did they go to therapy? Did they understand it? Did they take accountability? Or are they just saying that they cheated and they don't know why? Two different variances. I would say a yellow flag, if I'm allowed.
I appreciate that. They think voting is pointless.
Yeah, red flag. Have a fucking voice.
Okay. They have their own podcast.
If it's doing well, yay. If it's not, then it's a little bit of a red flag.
Okay, it depends on the amount of downloads. I get that. When they're hooking up with you and feeling turned on, they say daddy like.
Oof. No. Right. Yeah, no. Flag.
Got it. They are completely silent when they have sex with you.
I don't love it. A bit of a yellow flag, but I would, it's not enough to be a red flag. I would just say I'd probably just be like, that's a little weird.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Last one. They have a bigger social media following than you.
Podcast answer part two. It depends on what their following is for. If their following is something I respect, yay. If their following is because they're OnlyFans, red flag.
Okay. Got it. Okay. Question number 14. And this is question number 14 has two questions. You just have to pick one of the questions to answer. Okay. First question is, have you ever cheated on anyone? Or you can answer the question, has anyone ever cheated on you?
No, on both. I have emotionally cheated. That's when I realized it's like the moment when you start to text another guy and it's like instantly mm-hmm. when I realize I'm not interested in my partner. And then that leads to the breakup conversation that we had. Not to my knowledge, has anyone ever cheated on me? That was a real relationship, maybe a dating type of thing. Yeah. One person mm-hmm. I know, but other than that.
Would you want to know if anybody has cheated on you? Like, is that information
hindsight?
You want? Yeah.
No. I honestly blissfully unaware. Sometimes it's like, you know what? That's done. I don't need to make myself feel, because then of course I'm going to be like, what? But even at the end of the day, honestly, if I found out someone had cheated on me, I know it's not about me. That's their inability to either have communicated with me or talk to me. Like, yes, both people can play a part, but the person that implemented that cheating needs to take accountability and ownership that, like, you could just have talked to me or broken up with me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, makes sense. Number 15, I want you to think about all of your romantic relationships. What's your biggest relationship regret?
No joke. I thought about this the other day. The fact that in my 20s, I wasted so much of my fucking time on wondering if people were going to choose me and never stopping to ask if I actually chose them. I think about it. I spent 12 years in New York from 19 until 31, the entirety of my 20s. You know, sometimes you think back on, oh, I didn't have kids. Oh, well, I don't regret that. Sometimes I think mm-hmm. back and I'm like, but I don't regret it in the sense where I'm here, where I'm at now. There's no point in that. But would I change? My 20s? Yeah, I would have fucking changed it because I spent days, weeks, months crying, being depressed because some schmo I met on Tinder did not want to go on a second date with me. And mm-hmm. I just wish more than anything I had stopped focusing on do they choose me, and really had actually stopped to focus do I choose my fucking self?
Mm-hmm. Do you think that you, I mean, if maybe somebody told you that at that time, but like, if you think like somebody told you to do that, do you think you would have been able to do that at 24 years old or no?
Heck no. I thought I was, you know, no. You think that you're so, you think that you're hot shit. You think that you have it all figured out and you're a right. snowflake and nobody understands you. People tried to help me. My sister, mm-hmm. my family were like, yo, what are you doing? And I would just push them away. Mm-hmm. Wasn't ready.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Number 16, Sabrina, what is the most annoying thing about being in relationship with you?
Some self-awareness. I don't shut the fuck up, that I have a conscious stream, and the amount of times I'll hear Ryan go, babe, I'm not even in the room. And I'm like, oh, sorry. Like, it's just, it gets to a point where sometimes he's just like, my God, you just talk to yourself. I'm like, yeah. So that's probably the bigger annoyance. And that I'm like really big on self-development. Like, I call people out so hard. So like, if you are somebody that, like, Ryan's in therapy, he loves it. But like, if you're somebody that does not like that and you just want to have like a nice copacetic relationship where nobody says anything and calls you out, she is not your girl for you.
Yeah, I can see why people would find that annoying, but I can see why the right person would be like a really good fit. And right. And probably find it like helpful and maybe even endearing or sweet or loving, you know, like you're trying to protect the relationship. And yeah, so
yeah,
I get it. Number 17, do you think that everything happens for a reason?
You know, I used to. And then I kind of had to come to the realization where I was like, I think a lot of the times we put that Band-Aid on it just for us to cope with it, just to be like, well, it must have happened for a reason. And it's like, Yeah, there's a lot of things in my life. Like when Clem died, my dog, at the moment, I couldn't find the reason. You know, you're just like, no. Mm-hmm. But then now in hindsight, I'm like, that cleared the way. Okay, got it. Mm-hmm. But then there are other days where things happen and you're like, maybe there isn't. And so I think if it helps you get through tough times saying everything happens for a reason, I'm not going to fucking poo-poo on your party, because sometimes hindsight becomes 20/20, and then in 6 months, you're like, even certain things that have happened in the last week, you start to see how the chess pieces all align and you're like, oh, you know what? What it's taught me is when something happens, surrender. If something's going to leave, I release control. If it's going to come back, yay. And if that's the reason it happens, so be it.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I mean, I would never tell somebody that's in pain, like, this happened for a reason, but I tell myself that all the time. And it mostly works. it's toxic positivity, and I'll use that toxic positivity on myself when I need to, but I won't use it for other people. I won't like give it to other people.
Yeah, it's like sometimes we just need to get through the fucking day, right? And you're just like, all right, well, exactly. Maybe everything happens for a reason. And it's like, you know what? Yeah. That's not hurting anybody. Like, it's not like you're going around being like, positive vibes only. That's the toxic positivity that you're like, that's going to fuck with your mental health. This.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I agree. 18. What do you think of me?
Can I boast and brag? I think you are, talk about a breath of fresh air. I think you are so incredibly lovely as a human being, aside from even just knowing you personally, but professionally, but like even just as a person to talk to. But I think that you are somebody that I respect and I look up to. I think that you have a lot of expertise. I think you have a lot of years of working with people, holding compassion for people, but also holding them accountable. And for that, I fucking see you and I fucking love it. So I'm so here for Jeff. I'm here for therapy, Jeff, all goddamn day.
Oh, that's a great answer. It's my favorite question. And you gave a lovely answer. Thank you very much.
You're like, please again, call me pretty and tell me, just come on. Just
exactly. We have two questions left. All right. Number 19, let's say that you grow old with your partner. Okay. You grow old, you're together forever. Do you want to die first or second?
First. I'm not. I don't want
to. First. Why?
I do, because it's, I mean, listen, Ryan's grandparents have been together since they were 12 and they're in their 80s now. And it's like, yeah, exactly. Wow. I know you're like, huh? And so, and like, they're the sweetest fucking people. They're so lovely. But I could not imagine that if I was with Ryan for 50, 60 years, that if he leaves, I don't know how I would be able to really go on and be like, because especially like if we don't have kids, I don't know. I'm still unsure about that. Mm-hmm. I'd rather exit stage left and be like, sorry, you got to deal with this versus it's selfish. But yeah, I'd rather au revoir first.
What do you think his answer would be? Would he want to go first?
You know what? Honestly, I think he'd probably say that he would want to go. He wants to live longer. Like, he wants to go well into 100. And I'm like, listen.
Oh, God, no.
Exactly. Unless you really figure out this biohacking thing where I don't have to turn into what our grandparents are now, where like every ailment is a problem. Please, get the cane and get me off stage. You know, like, we don't need to keep this going. If I'm 95 and barely geriatric and can barely function and I don't even know your name, I don't need to keep doing this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 I get that.
What about you?
I prefer to go second. I want to like be there for my partner as they're like exiting. I want to like, yeah, help them through it. I want to like be by their side and say goodbye and then get some fucking peace and quiet. You know what I mean? Just like do whatever the fuck I want to do.
Just complete the circle. And then you're like, whew, all right, this bitch. Okay. Yeah. No, and yeah. I gotta do that. Trust me. I contemplated that. And I was like, it depends on the age. If I'm young and sexy and sick and 70. Yeah. But if I'm 95, nah, let me go.
Yeah, for sure. Last question. Number 20. Are you happy?
Such an elusive statement. I will say, right. I'm fulfilled. Happy for me is a struggle because I have a lot of mental health stuff that like makes it really hard, because like some days everything could be fine to you. You could look at me and say, what's your issue today? And I might be spiraling because there's something that triggered me. And then all of a sudden I start to fear that this is going to lead. And then there's like this whole spiral. Mm-hmm. And so I try to at the very least say, am I fulfilled? Do I feel supported? Do I feel like my nervous system is regulated? Do I feel like I'm showing up authentically? And do I feel fueled by what I'm doing? So if that means I'm happy, yes. But I struggle because, you know what? And I think why I struggle so hard, it just hit me as you were saying, as we were talking about this, is because that's my father's go-to. Are you happy?
Oh,
and he's always, all my life, like even now, he just says, as long as you're happy. And I'm like, but what does that mean to you? You know, like I always ask him, I'm like, but what do you mean as long as I'm happy? And so that's kind of his thing. Oh, I just want you happy. And it's like, well, what would make me happy is if you and I could have a conversation. Well, that can't happen. Mm-hmm. So I think there's that weird, I've always seen that as you think I'm happy. And I'm like, meanwhile, I'm crying in my room. And so I've struggled for a long time to be like, what does that even look like for me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the point of the question is that like we all get to define what happiness means for us. And I think we all have like a very interesting take on how we answer that question. So I appreciate that. You are like the best person to ask all these questions to. You didn't skip any. You gave such good answers. You're fun. You're entertaining and educational. We all learned a lot from you. Thank you so much, Sabrina. Can you tell everybody where they can find you?
Of course. Thank you, Jeff. I really appreciate you having me and thank you for having some fun. And thank you for letting me, we somehow got this done before the hour and that is fucking impressive because at 35 minutes we were at question 9 and I was like, we're fucked.
I know.
So teamwork, it certainly does make the dream work. Yeah. So Do the Work podcast, you can find Jeff on there and we're going to have you back on if you'd like, because I'd love to. And then Do the Work podcast on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Sabrina.Zohar is really where you can find me and hopefully join the crew, join the fun and learn a little bit more along the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Highly recommend listening to your podcast and following you on all the socials. It's really good. It's really empowering and educational. We love it. Okay. I'll talk to you later.
Until next time, Jeff now.